Hello, Marvelites! You are listening to This Week in Marvel, episode number 405. I'm Ryan, a.k.a. Agent M.
And I'm Lorraine Sink, human, woman, and Martian.
Yep. For a second, you were scratching your ear area, and yeah. I thought you were, like, doing one of those things where, like, you're...
Old-timey radio!
Yeah, old-timey radio, touching my ear. This is This Week in Marvel. We're going to talk about all kinds of stuff that's happening across all aspects of Marvel, from comics to games, movies, television, and so much more. First things first, I am going to the X Games!
Where all the X-Men play games, like baseball and volleyball, and they snuggle.
They wear all their little short shorts.
Yeah,
they love all the baseball.
Oh my god.
Man, they're just in their like tiniest little clothings. Yeah, so the X Games will be in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I'm going to be there. If you are going, let us know. We'll be shooting some videos, looking for some great Marvel fans. I will try to remember to bring some Twim swag with me to hand along. And yeah, so definitely tweet me at Agent M if you are going to be there.
You know what I'm excited about this week, though?
Bus.
Marvel Studios Avengers Endgame is out this week on digital in HD, 4K Ultra HD, and it's also on Movies Anywhere. I'm super excited because of all of the awesome bonus features that are going to be on it. I think that's my favorite thing about getting a movie on home release. And this one's going to include a tribute to Stan Lee, the tale of Robert Downey Jr.'s casting as Iron Man, which I've heard that story, and it's great.
So I watched a bunch of these the night before we were recording this. So like the casting of Iron Man has his screen test footage. Some of it spliced in there. It's really, really fun to watch.
Yeah, I watched the gag reel, which is stinking hilarious.
Yep.
And they also have the evolution of Captain America, Black Widow's dramatic story arc. They have more stuff with Anthony and Joe Russo, the director and creators of that film. So go check it out. Go get it on HD. Let's talk about it. It makes me feel all the feels.
All the feels. Our episode this week, we're going to have an interview with Dan DeLue, who is VFX supervisor for Marvel Studios Avengers Endgame. And I'm very excited. He's a great guy.
Yeah. We already released a piece where you talked to him about the Hulk for Earth's Mightiest Show, which is so cool. Really go over and check out the visuals on that because it's awesome. I also love Mark Ruffalo. You get to see some of the BTS footage of him like with all of the cameras on his face and wearing like a black suit covered in dots. It's just really funny and interesting. And there are going to be more of those rolling out in Earth's Mightiest Show. I got to see the one we break down the battle Endgame. And it's not going to be out for a little bit, but you guys, I can't wait for you to see it because it's bucket nuts.
Yeah, it is really cool. And I like that this is stuff that is separate from what is on the Blu-ray on the special features that you get digitally. So it's more bonus footage for you guys that only we can provide you.
Yeah.
And because I really wanted to talk about Death's Head.
Oh, boy.
And we have a new comic out this week by Tini Howard and Kaizama called Death's Head. We're going to do a little big talk about Death's Head later this episode. Yeah, it was fun. I did about half of it from memory and then like did a bunch of extra research, which made me really happy.
What's your favorite thing about Death's Head?
I think it's the multi-dimensional aspect of the character. Like the fact that Death's Head can transverse universes and dimensions. Like he's hung out with Doctor Who and like fought Doctor Who. He was a bounty hunter going after Transformers. And he also like goes and hangs out with, you know, Fantastic Four or the X-Men or whatever.
I think it's because you like weirdos, but that's why I like you.
Also true. But what do we have next?
We have things we're hyped about this week, including news.
You forgot the comma, Lorraine.
The comma is silent. So is the coma if you spell it wrong.
All right, we got to keep moving. The first thing that we're hyped about this week, in a sense, is that the final episode of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. filmed this week. And, you know, I saw Christine Din, who she used to be on the show, and she's doing great work for our West Coast group.
For Marvel.com, we should say, not on actual Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right. But she's been on set a lot and done a lot of work with the S.H.I.E.L.D. team. And she posted a really great thing on her Instagram I read this morning, just like talking about her memories, and saw a lot of photos that she posted. That's Chrisipedia across all her social pages. She's wonderful. But that got me thinking, like, oh, we should talk about like our memories. What do you have?
So Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was the first junket-style interview I ever got to do. We went over to a hotel in New York.
I remember that down. Very distinctly.
I was a little tiny baby at this point who had done very, very few interviews at this point, because at the time I was a talking head kind of gal. One of my first interviews, I also got to give Elizabeth Henstridge one of her first interviews of all time. I think she said it was the first time she'd ever done an interview.
And I remember, because I was there for all that, yeah. And I was talking to Elizabeth, and she's like, oh, my sister follows you, and like, she loves you. And like, it was just such a, so weird and sweet, and that was a fun moment, like, fun day.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, there have been so many times, because you and I have been to set, and we've had them around for so many years now. And because it was the first Marvel television show, I feel like they're our family too. You know, I see Clark Gregg and he's like, hey, Lorraine, what's going on? Like, what are we doing today? Yeah. And it's nice. What about for you?
Yeah. You know, you think about it. We were just in San Diego and we were leaving one party and the entire cast and crew is walking in as we're leaving. And Clark's like, hey, he gives us a hug. We see Elizabeth. We see Chloe and all them. And then like, we were just like ships passing in the night. But it was so sweet. It's just like seeing friends and they're like, see you guys.
You know what else it just reminded me of? One of my first interviews I did with Marissa Tancharoen and Jed Whedon, and I think we've talked about this before, was that I sat down with them and I was like, tell me about the characters and who are they? And they were talking about Fitzsimmons and they were like, oh, they're the most like us. Like, Fitz and Simmons is us. And it's been really sweet also to see Jed and Marissa, because they're actually a married couple, to see their relationship progress over the years. Yep. And now they have a child. And now we know that Fitz and Simmons at some point have a child because of Deke and that connection. And they got married, and it's really fun to see Fitz and Simmons kind of also follow their storyline. So that's just like a fun bit of the behind the scenes. But all of the cast have been posting pictures and memories. So it's really awesome. Go get on that gram.
Yeah. We got some cool news, though, coming up on the TV realm.
Yeah, Marvel's Runaways has finally released when its third season is hitting. It's coming out December 13th with all 10 episodes dropping at the same time. But also, this is really cool. Nico Minoru is drawing everyone into the Dark Realm, where its ruler, Morgan Le Fay, is going to be played by Elizabeth Hurley. And she's going to, you know, be a problem.
Yes. Morgan Le Fay, one of the coolest Marvel characters. She's
and
like awesome.
A purveyor of the deep V.
Deepest V.
Not a lot of ladies get to rock the deep V these days, but she's still bringing it.
Yes. Very much so. You guys can catch up on seasons 1 and 2 of Marvel's Runaways exclusively on Hulu right now.
But wait, Ryan, there's more.
That's right, Lorraine. Crossover episode confirmed. Marvel's Runaways and Marvel's Cloak and Dagger this December. The heroes Cloak and Dagger will find themselves crossing paths with our Runaways during its season 3 release. And you asked, we answered. This is the crossover fans have been begging for since the beginning and has finally been confirmed. Now we will see that they collide this year in a crossover episode. And we have a quote from Mr. Jeff Loeb, executive producer and head of Marvel Television. He says, quote, it's so fun being able to do something that revels in the mighty Marvel manner. Having these young heroes crossover allows fans of both shows to see the adventure everyone has been waiting for and we've only hinted at. So how will Cloak and Dagger cross paths with the Runaways? It's yet to be revealed. Expect more details as we near the season 3 premiere of Marvel's Runaways, only on Hulu. All right, so that's a lot of good stuff.
Ah, yes, a stiff infection.
I've got a stiff infection.
It's a Scottish stiff infection.
So we have so much fun stuff that we're hyped about. But I know we have lapsed on our Twim URCs, the Unlimited Reading Club, for a little bit. So our 2000s episode is coming up this month with C.B. Sapolsky and myself. We'll be discussing either the Ultimate Comics line, some of the key issues in there, or some key Marvel stuff from the aughts. I threw a bunch of suggestions to CB Sobolski.
If anybody wants to do Twim URC with me via Twitter on Just the Runaways comics, get at me because I'm available for that any day of the week.
Fair. But that stuff, we're going to be looking back on the 2000s. We have to look back now at 80 years this week in Marvel history. We're looking at the week of August 2nd through August 8th.
All right, let's kick it off with August 2nd, 1962. Loki makes himself magnificent, mischievous in his first appearance in Journey into Mystery number 85, just 2 issues into that run. We find Loki trapped within a tree as punishment from the Asgardians, because that's where you go. That's your timeout, is a tree.
It's like, just stuck in there.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously. He makes a leaf drop while Heimdall is walking by said tree, causing Heimdall to shed a tear, freeing Loki naturally because magic. And then Loki, you know, he causes mischief. That's what he does. And the issue can be credited with the first appearance of Heimdall, Odin, Baldur, and Asgard, though they don't get any major spotlights just yet.
Yeah, there's literally a panel of the backs of their heads. Like, oh, look, it's Baldur and Odin. And like, cool.
I also want to credit the Norse people with the creation of all these characters.
Nah.
No? Okay.
Screw them.
All right, great.
All right. August 8th, 1963. It's a big day in the Marvel Universe. Lots to talk about here. So, Amazing Spider-Man number 6 by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko introduces the Lizard, a.k.a. Kurt Connors and his family.
Cold-blooded.
Yeah. In, let's see, we've got Molecule Man, one of the most powerful and bullied characters in the Marvel Universe, debuts in Fantastic Four number 20 by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And actually, he is an important point of the current Future Foundation book that is just launching. He has been exploded in his molecules all around the multiverse. So
he went to pieces.
Yeah. Okay. Over in Tales of Suspense number 47, Stan Lee and Steve Ditko introduce Iron Man's newest foe, the mysterious Melter.
Oh no, the Melter and Iron Man. They're going to be obvious foes because Iron melts.
I love the cover too. Iron Man's arm, like Melter just like melts away part of Iron Man's arm, like the armor, but his arm is fine.
It doesn't melt flesh, but it does melt iron.
Yeah, that's a good power.
All right, August 4th, 1964, the Purple Man, a.k.a. Zebediah Kilgrave, one of the most sinister and nasty and disturbing and gross and jerk-faced villains in Marvel history, makes his first appearance in Daredevil number 4. And then longtime Hulk foe and supporting character Glenn Talbot and his sassy mustache debuts in Tales to Astonish number 61.
He does have a real good stash.
I know. I was just, when I first saw the notes, I was like, how are we not talking stash all day?
This is why you're here. We bring the thunder. August 8th, 1968, behold the Vision. He's one of the longest tenured and most important members of the Avengers, the Synthezoid Vision. He makes his first appearance in here in Avengers number 57 by Roy Thomas and John Buscema. He's created by Ultron and sent to kill the Avengers in this issue, but then he turns on his maker and he helps defeat the malevolent droid. It's a beautiful issue, one of the most iconic Marvel covers as well.
And also, fun fact, the next issue is called Even an Android Can Cry. It is one of my favorite things of all time because it's just Vision being like, how do I have all these feelings, which is relatable. Okay, August 5th, 1969.
Nice.
Thor number 169.
Nice.
By Stan Lee and Jack Kirby features the first origin of Galactus, along with the first appearance of Big G's home of Ta and his true original name, Galen. It's also a magnificently beautiful issue with Kirby's art at the height of its power.
This is such a gorgeous issue. I highly suggest anyone check it out. It's on Marvel Unlimited. It's really, really good.
There you have it. And then Stingray also made his first splash in the pages of Submariner number 19. Walter Newell debuted a few years prior, but this is his superhero debut. And fun fact, Stingray's brother-in-law is the aquatic villain Tiger Shark. And also another fun fact, I use them interchangeably in my mind. I'm like those water guys.
So Tiger Shark has a tiger face, yeah. Like a tiger shark face.
Yeah.
Stingray has a great costume. It's white and red, and he's got like an arrow pointing down his torso for some reason. Like, hey, look here, everybody. And
I think it's supposed to imitate a stingray tail, but
sure. And he's got the great, like the almost wings to look like a stingray. It's a really great costume.
I still use them interchangeably in my
fine.
Mind.
August 4th, 1981, Avengers Annual number 10 by Chris Claremont and Michael Golden is released. It is a hugely important and influential issue because it not only features the first appearance of Rogue, but is also a major turning point for Carol Danvers. And while it's not shown in the issue, the story picks up shortly after Rogue has used her powers to absorb Carol's powers, her abilities, her memories, her almost her entire identity. There's a point where Carol is a blank slate, they say.
Yeah.
And it nearly destroys Carol, who is only saved thanks to her friends Spider-Woman and the X-Men. She's actually physically saved by Jessica Drew, who is in San Francisco and sees a woman falling off a bridge. Mm-hmm. And she grabs Carol before she hits the water. It is horrible.
Yeah, it's also sort of the beginning of their relationship, yeah. which they continue to be besties today.
Yeah.
So that has really carried through in the comics. It also, like, it's so sad because it's terrible for both Rogue and Carol. Like, it's not like Rogue did it and was like, yay. She's like, I don't want all this stuff. I'm carrying this, all these women's feelings and thoughts and memories, and it's really messed up.
And but Rogue's still a kid at that point. Like, yeah. very young. She's probably, like, late teens, early 20s. She's being told what to do by Mystique and Destiny, who are her, like, surrogate parents, but at the same time, they're not the best.
They're not the best, but I love them.
Oh, my God.
Mystique and Destiny, OTP.
Have you read House of X number 2?
I haven't read it yet.
The Destiny scene in there. So good. It's so good. I actually walked into the X-Men office and was like, I need a Destiny book right now. But leave it at that.
Damn it.
Yeah.
I have to leave. August 2nd, 1983. Quick update / correction. We originally noted that July 12th, 1983 was the date that Beta Ray Bill debuted in Thor number 337. The first issue was written by Walter Simonson, but that was the shipping date. It actually hit stands on August 2nd. Again, this is the beginning of one of the greatest runs in comic book history. Go read it. Beta Ray Bill is a dang gem. Yeah. He deserves to have his own Mjolnir.
Yes, he's great.
He's awesome.
August 6th, 1985, Rachel Summers becomes Phoenix in Uncanny X-Men number 199 by Chris Claremont and John Romita Jr. Great issue. It is awesome. Rachel goes through some stuff.
That's another lady with a tiger face. Well, person.
She's got the horrible tattoos on her face. Yes.
August 3rd.
they're put there by slavers. It's a really upsetting story.
Well, I was going to say any facial tattoo is like hard to commit to, but one that you haven't chosen for yourself is different.
Yeah, like the M looks really cool, but that is put on there by people who brand mutants in the future as mutants, and that's why like the Bishop M tattoo is an upsetting thing.
Should we shave an M into your eyebrow?
We gotta go. Keep this train rolling. Right. What's next?
All right, August 3rd, 1993. Marvel's son, Jennis Vell, debuts as Legacy in Silver Surfer Annual number 6, which he starts out as this ponytailed, newfangled 90s version of Captain Marvel, the first one. And then Jennis evolves into a really interesting character struggling with identity several times,
yeah.
Humanity, relationships, power, and legacy. I say identity because he stole Monica Rambeau's name twice. She was like, I'm Captain Marvel. He's like, no, that was my dad's name. That should be my name. So he took it. And then she's like, okay. And then she was like, I'll be Photon. And then he came down. He's like, wait, I've been rolling as Photon because I decided I didn't want to be Captain Marvel anymore. And she was like, oh, my God, get an original thought, jerk. But she was like, fine.
Yeah.
She was so nice about it.
I know. She did not need to be.
No, she did not need to be. All right. August 7th, 1996. Ryan, say it.
Onslaught!
Yep, there it is. Thor, Captain America, Iron Man, the Fantastic Four, and the Avengers sacrifice themselves to stop Onslaught. in Onslaught, Marvel Universe by Mark Waid and Adam Kubert. They'd re-emerge the next month in Heroes Reborn titles. Because heroes can't die. Not really.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like when the X-Men just disappeared and then ended up in Australia. Yeah. I just, like, love it.
Siege Perilous, baby! All right, August 7, 2015, the Fantastic Four movie opens in theaters. That rounds up our This Week in Marvel History for the week. We do have to talk about the top books from this week's episode of Marvel's The Pull List.
Yeah! Black Panther, number 14. Conan the Barbarian, number 8. Powers of 10, which is actually an X, number 1, and Death's Head, number 1, because Ryan.
It's a great book, too.
Awesome.
Subscribe to Marvel's The Pull List wherever you get your podcasts, and watch video versions on Marvel.com. Real quick, I wanted, because Death's Head, number 1, is so good, I wanted to do a little bit of a big talk about it, because the series is great. It launched this week by Teeny Howard and Kaizama. Terrific, terrific stuff. But Death's Head is kind of an obscure character, yes. I say that way because that's how he talks. He puts a yes question mark
yes?
at the end of many sentences. It's just a little tick of his. So who is Death's Head? He's a robot bounty hunter, quote unquote, freelance peacekeeping agent, as he calls himself.
He's just programmed to say yes. I think that's it. Yes?
Yes. He was created by Simon Furman and Jeff Senior, first appearing in Marvel's UK comics in 1987. So really wasn't in US comics right away.
Yeah, the story goes that his first major story appearance was in Transformers number 113 from Marvel UK, but his first actual comics appearance was in a one-page story by Furman and Brian Hitch that appeared in a number of books beforehand.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. He's got this weird history. So, fun fact about him, and I mentioned this earlier, he's a Marvel Universe character, but he's shown up in Transformers comics, in Doctor Who comics, and he time travels, so he can travel dimensions. End time, he's fought Superior Spider-Man, the Fantastic Four, She-Hulk, and many, many more. He's been a giant robot and a regular human-sized robot. It's sort of like, however you want to draw him, whatever the story needs, he can be.
There have been Death's Head 2 and 3.0 versions, but the original is still the most beloved.
Truly. But for me, Death's Head 2 was my first introduction to the characters. It was a reboot of the widely released Marvel UK line in the early 1990s. But as I've grown older and read more Death's Head stories, I find that I love the original Death's Head stuff much more as an adult. I just want to read it all.
Yeah. Original Death's Head appeared in the current Marvel Universe comics in 2009 through 2010 Sword series by noted British bad boy Kieran Gillen. Not to be confused with Nebula, Karen Gillen.
Correct.
And artist Steven Sanders. He'd then show up in the 2013 Iron Man story, The Secret Origin of Tony Stark by Karen Gillen and Greg Land.
Yeah. And in
With Arno.
Yes. In 2014, we had a crossover series called Revolutionary War featuring Marvel UK characters. And so the Death's Head issue of the series, like a bunch of one-shots. There was one that was like Revolutionary War, Death's Head 2. And the Death's Head issue has both one and two versions of Death's Head fighting with each other and then getting captured, and they just become a whole part of this larger Revolutionary War story.
Oh, and you can read the more recent issues on Marvel Unlimited, but there's not a ton of the old UK stuff collected in recent times or available digitally. But we do have Death's Head number 10 on Marvel Unlimited, which has Death's Head versus Iron Man 2020 by Furman and Hitch. And it's really cool, plus a wild backup story with Death's Head OG and 2.
Yes, that story is awesome. Death's Head number 10 with Arno Stark, Iron Man 2020, and Death's Head fighting. It is really, really neat. But again, we have a new Death's Head series, and it is great. I grabbed a couple quotes about what Tini had to say about Death's Head. She says, quote, "So I was drawn to Death's Head as a character that looks super powerful and tough, but is big, clunky, breaks easily, and his whole job is apprehending people for money. And if people with better tech surpass you in that, you end up kind of broke, yes? Also, he's a great big boy with weapons. He has a Swiss Army knife for an arm that takes different attachments. Who wouldn't love that guy?" And the attachment everybody loves to see is the spiked mace,
yeah.
which is great.
I also absolutely adore Tini Howard. She's awesome.
Yep.
Also, Wiccan and Hulkling are in the book, which is important to me.
To
personally.
So many people.
Oh my God. Yes. And Tini says, "It's really fun to put Wiccan and Death's Head together. They're so different. Their powers occasionally cause problems for one another. They're such an odd couple, but they're really after the same thing, understanding their place in the world that makes them feel obsolete. Wizards and robots, robots and wizards, and their shape-shifting boyfriends." Oh, we've got everything.
Yeah.
Oh.
So good. So good. So Death's Head, kind of dark, funny, quirky. He's out for himself, out for the cash. Has an amazing character design, can fit into all kinds of stories, and all of you should love him.
Yeah, there you go. Duh.
Yeah.
We also wanted to give a shout out to a podcast. I think this is kind of like the twim of ESPN. It's ESPN's The Woj Pod. You can get an inside scoop on all of the biggest NBA news with the biggest names in the game.
You join ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski for The Woj Pod, featuring in-depth conversations, breaking news, reactions, analysis, and just basically all the coverage they can handle of everything going on in the NBA, as well as, you know, deep dives, similar to what we were doing just now, with some of the most notable events in NBA history. The Woj Pod is the must-listen to for NBA fans. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. All right, our interview this week is with Dan DeLue, visual effects supervisor of Marvel Studios' Avengers Endgame. Dan is amazing. He's done so much cool stuff. He actually joined Marvel Studios way back for Marvel Studios Iron Man 3, and then he went on to be the visual effects supervisor for Marvel Studios Captain America the Winter Soldier, Marvel Studios Captain America Civil War, and Marvel Studios Avengers Infinity War. He's done so much cool stuff. The dude has been working so hard. We talked a lot about his career and working at Marvel and his love for all things Marvel. And, you know, of course, we get into what a visual effects supervisor actually does, his favorite kinds of scenes to work on, and so much more. And again, this is a reminder, I think we talked about it recently, but there's also some footage of the interview on Earth's Mightiest Show. You can check that out wherever you, you know, watch your Marvel videos, be it YouTube or Facebook or Twitter, whatnot. But enjoy this chat with Dan DeLue. I'm so excited to be sitting here with Dan DeLue, VFX supervisor of Marvel Studios Avengers Endgame. Dan, you ready for this?
I'm going
to grill you real hard.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. First things first, what is your Marvel origin story? How did you first get connected to the Marvel characters, whether it was comics or animation or like a bedsheet? I love hearing people's stories.
This will be sacrilege, actually. Uh-oh. Yes. So as a kid, loved comics.
Okay.
Read a lot of comics.
Uh-huh.
But we didn't have a lot of toys for comics.
Okay.
So I'd read them, and then I would take the characters and then cut them out of the comics.
Oh.
So that I could actually play with the characters together.
I thought you were going to start talking about a different company. Get out of the building you work in.
No, the Marvel company, they always had, they would have like an ad, and like all the characters were lined up around the ad. And you go in, so... You know, they go back and I look at my comic book collection now, years later. It's just a Swiss cheese of comics. But it was the first time I got to play with the characters.
Sure.
And now I get to play with them, like, you know, in real life.
They're probably influenced a lot of, like, the, you know, how you visualize characters, too, and the work that you do as VFX supervisor.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's it's kind of the same thing. It was interesting because it was always, you know, you took the characters there and you played with them. And then, like, any of the kind of the battles we do here, you know, we get like the little hero clicks, you know, sculpts of those. So I'd like, you know, for Civil War, I got enough of them. I laid them on a table. Okay, here's the plan. And then for Infinity War, I got more of them to lay on the table. And then for Endgame, I got like, it took up the entire table, just kind of figuring out who's in the battle and what the different, the different enemies and heroes look like together.
I have a Fin Fang Foom hero click sitting next to my TV at home.
Nice.
He's just one of my favorites.
Nice.
So you joined the MCU with Marvel Studios Iron Man 3. That was your first film with us?
Mm-hmm.
What was your path to the Marvel Universe before that?
Well, it's something you know, visual effects-wise, you kind of grow up and you grow up with the comics. You grow up, you know, for me, it was Star Wars and Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, it's like the kind of the genre films that you love and that are special to you. And it's something that you always hope someday you're going to be a movie that's special in the same way that it was to you, you know, to other people that see the film. So it was something that, as a kid, over the summer, you know, I would build different models, miniatures, and then blow them up on the 4th of July. And so, mostly firecrackers and things like that. Would not recommend. Don't do that at home.
Kids, be safe.
Be safe. We weren't. And we were stupid. But it was something. But it kind of, same thing. You're kind of learning in, you know, kind of, when I say miniatures, they were, you know, they blew up nicely. But the, but kind of, you know, always wanted to do that. And computer graphics came around. And so, it was something that, you know, okay, I want to kind of learn more about those. And then, you know, got a job in visual effects, you know, kind of just, you know, kind of the second person that they hired at this company named DreamQuest to do digital, and then kind of grew from there. Went through animation, compositing, and just kind of worked my way up. And then we worked on a lot of Bruckheimer movies back in the day, you know, a lot of the action films. Cool. And then started doing more character animation. So I worked on a bunch of, you know, talking animal shows and, like, you know, kind of kid talking animal shows.
Helpful and, with all the work you've done with Rocket.
Exactly, with the character animation. So it's like, you know, it's just a strange background that somehow just kind of had all the different pieces. Mm-hmm. That when I, you know, got to work on Iron Man 2 with Chris Townsend and his team, it was something that was great. I did second unit, and then I flew out to, as we were finishing that, you know, I met with Victoria Alonso, and she's, you know, okay, you know, what do you want to do next? It's like, well, I want to stay here because this is the best thing ever. And she's like, well, we got two films coming up. We have Guardians of the Galaxy, and then there's Captain America Winter Soldier. And then I'm kind of like, well, you know, I've done a lot of talking animal stuff. And she's like, no, you should do Captain America. I'm like, okay. And so I flew out one night, interviewed with the Russos. And then they called me a couple hours later and said I had the show and came back, finished up Iron Man 3. And then from there, it was, you know, it was Winter Soldier, Civil War, Infinity War, and Endgame after that.
Pretty good.
Pretty great.
Yeah.
Pretty great.
So we've had we have a ton of people on the show, a lot of comic creators or actors or various disciplines.
But what exactly does a VFX supervisor do? Like, what is your role on a production like Endgame, which is really two movies back to back in one, what was it, 3 year period?
Yeah. Over 3 years, we worked on the two films. The simplest description is it's just, you know, you're in charge of making what's you see on set or on camera that you can't actually make. You know, so you're doing Rocket, you're doing any of the characters, you're doing any of the kind of the big environments. But basically, you get the script, you work with the directors, kind of understand what they want creatively. And then from there, you kind of break down the script with your team and kind of figure out what will actually be needed to accomplish a shot, not just in post with CG, but then also when you're actually photographing it. So it's like, you know, okay, so what do we need to build? And so kind of our general rule is that if you walk on it, you touch it, then you're building it. And if you don't, then we'll do it. and so you kind of guide that process and figure out the scope of the show. And then you're there on set during photography. And, you know, with these films, it was a little different because you're making them together. So you had a great team on set helping you supervise the shots, but then also working in post. You know, and you're there on set when you can't see something. You know, part of your job is to be able to imagine it. Now with kind of simulcam and things like that, you can see the Hulk and Thanos on set, which makes it a lot easier for everybody else to see. And then you guide the show through post and getting all the shots done and kind of figuring out balancing all the different effects houses.
Speaking of the effects houses, how many companies are you working with, especially on a production like Marvel Studios Avengers Endgame, which is a massive film? It's got to be a dozen or more effects houses, right?
Yeah, we had 14 effects houses that it's, you know, we always said there was like the sun never sets on Endgame. People were getting engaged. We had Weta down in New Zealand, and then we had, you know, teams throughout Europe and Germany and in the UK. And then kind of back, and some folks out in New York, and then people in California. And we had this small little team out in Maui, so you could pretty much, you know, circumnavigate the globe in terms of, you know, the number of people that worked on it.
Do they each have like different disciplines or characters or shots, or like how do you sort of look at dividing this?
Well, you look at casting, right? So the casting is a great way to describe it. Just like you would cast an actor, you're going to cast a visual effects house to what their strengths are. So you've got, you know, Weta and ILM and Digital Domain were kind of the big houses we had on this one. And on Endgame, in terms of kind of the final battle, you've got Weta and all the work they had done on The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. And they worked with us with Thanos on Infinity War. So if you need character animation, giant battles, they're the guys you go to. And then with ILM, you're the same thing. It's casting. So they got great character animation. They've got great destruction, great water. So they did the Thanos' ship blowing up, all the water work with Doctor Strange holding the river back. And so you're just kind of looking for those different talents in terms of what you could do in terms of casting them for the show.
That's cool. What's your favorite part of this gig?
Oh, effects and supervising in general. Well, it's interesting. It's when you work on a show, it's effects are about not as real time as you can get. You know, when you photograph, you know, you kind of see it and you get it and kind of edit it from there. So you've got this process where it is, you know, extends over a year and a half, 3 years. And so you've got all the different decisions you make 3 years ago are going to affect you in the last 2 months of getting the show done. But the best part of that is you've got, you know, you get the different shots as they progress. There's always this moment, this magic moment, where it goes from this thing that is kind of in its different pieces and different components, and it just comes alive. And that's the day where you just, you know, you see Thanos for the first time, you see Smart Hulk for the first time, you see, you know, the first pass at blowing up the H ship, and it's just this magical shot that you just, you know, you get through dailies and then you go back to your desk and you just play the shot on a loop the rest of the day just watching it, you know, as it comes alive.
That's cool. How does your team work with someone like Russell Bobbitt and the props team? Because he's making practical versions, but there's also, of course, the CGI, VFX versions of so many of those elements.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's a... You know, partly, you know, it's the Russo brothers, you know, they always say the saying, like, the best idea wins. And then Marvel has kind of developed this team, nurtured this team that we've all been together. And so even though, like, with the effects teams, we'll cycle out for a little bit, but you always have Russell Bobbitt, you always have Dan Sudik. There's always these, you know, different department heads that you've worked with before and that, you know, you have this relationship with. And so we all get together and we all try to figure out the best way to do it. You know, with Russell, if it's something that it's like it'll be hero, it'll be photographable, it stays in the film. it's great. Sometimes you'll have something that you know you're going to replace, but he'll still build it for us. I mean, we always get these reference. Russell's the best. And you'll see it on every single movie. But when we photograph shots, we have either the prop that we use for like lighting reference, or he'll build smaller versions of the prop for us, you know, because it's something that maybe it's too big. But he always loves to go out there and like walk around the set. So if you ever want to see, like, if you want to see Russell Bobbitt, look at her outtakes, you know, see him out there like spinning Steve's, you know, shield around, and he'll have Stormbreaker and kind of moving that around the set so you can kind of see the prop.
That's cool.
It's great.
You know, we've been talking here for a little while, and you get gleeful when you talk about certain scenes and or Professor Hulk or different things. What's your favorite type of, you know, scene to shoot and put together?
It's interesting. It's like you got movies like Endgame, you got movies like Infinity War. It's like our opening battle in Infinity War would have been other movies' final battle, right? So it's like, but it's you, these films. Sometimes in a film, it's like one thing. Okay, now you're going to do fight. You're going to do like a destroyed environment, or you're going to do a character. You do every version of every film in these films. So you've, whatever your favorite moment is, you've got different versions of that. So, you know, I've got a soft spot for character animation for sure, and then, you know, characters. And so we've got those with Thanos and Professor Hulk for sure. The battles and the fights, and, you know, I think that, you know, you get a lot of. With the characters and the fights, because we work in previs, you know, you basically you're kind of bringing the comic book alive in a way, right? You're using their powers, and so in a lot of ways we're able to bring powers alive, like, you know, we haven't been able to in the past. So you work on like Winter Soldier, you get Falcon, and it's like, okay, what do we know about Falcon? And it's like, we, you know, when we started with Falcon, we just started doing motion studies and previs and just tried to figure out what he could do. And so it's like, okay, let's see how he flies. And then it's like, well, let's grab the helicarriers and like have him attack the helicarriers. So a lot of that stuff is just, you know, it grows from motion studies. So all of his assault in the helicarrier came out of us just, you know, playing. I mean, you know, you say you're at work, but, you know, honestly, sometimes we just play. Keep it a secret from the higher ups, but we just kind of, what are we going to do today? I don't know. We're going to have fly to a helicarrier. You're going to shoot at him, and a Quinjet's going to take him. It's like, what are we going to do today? So we're going to have all the heroes in the universe run against the other heroes in the universe.
toys.
Is that a job? Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
You're getting paid for it. You're doing something right.
Yeah.
You talked a little bit about the powers. I would love to talk a little bit about the comics inspirations and some of those moments. You know, there's like Scarlet Witch taking off, this iconic scene where she's head to head against Thanos and she lifts up the rubble. It just felt like such a. I think you got that too.
Yeah.
Like nerdy video game joy, comic book joy moment that surfaces.
Yeah, for sure. And that's where we'll always go back, you know, because, you know, you've got years and years, decades of like of reference for who your characters are. You've got decades of ideas for who your characters are. So you'll always go back. You know, I got, you know, not a plug, but I got Marvel Unlimited on the iPad. So you go back in and go, okay, I want to go find this issue. And you just kind of like start looking up, you know, and then like you'll go online, you'll find, you know, images from, you'll find panels, and you'll like, let's figure out what comic that is. And you go through and look at it. And, you know, and it's kind of paying homage to the comics, you know, and that's why you kind of like the, you know, the splash panel, you know, like the splash pages in the comics. And, you know, we started doing that with Civil War in a big way.
Yeah.
And then just kind of incorporating all that into the film and incorporating that same kind of iconography, you know, in terms of what we saw from the comics as well.
Yeah.
Into it.
I was looking at Secret Wars #4, like the classic, you know, mid-80s issue. It had this almost impossible, you would, when you were younger, you're like, that's impossible. The Hulk's holding up a giant mountain. He's saving everybody.
Yep.
But then you have that moment in Endgame, which was so cool. How much fun was that for you to
I mean,
to
it's,
see
it's
that?
Great. It's, I mean, you, because, you know, you will. You'll, you know, you're, again, you're playing at work, so you're going through and you're looking back at your favorite comics and just kind of, you know, taking those ideas, you know, in Civil War with Tony and Cap, you know, the panel we stole from that. And so it's like, you know, and it's something too, it will go, when I start a film, it'll be, you know, with my team, again, with the previous team, I'll, you know, go online, kind of do a little search and find panels that I like, and then let's make a folder. And it's like, okay, this is one of your shots. This is one of your shots. This is one of your shots. And then eventually, you know, they don't shoot it that way. Sometimes you're like, okay, we're going to go back and change that shot. We're going to change it back into the panel.
There's, of course, Captain America wielding Mjolnir, which, you know, that has happened a couple times in the comics, whether it's Fear itself. There's he was facing off again. He was, I think, as the captain when he held the hammer at one point in the comics. But when did you find out that that was going to be a shot you guys get to put together?
Early on, it was like something that kind of when you heard that these films were happening, you kind of knew that it was kind of going to be a little bit of a bookend on kind of the first few phases of the MCU. You knew it hadn't happened, right? You know, it's like when you saw it in Ultron, when he just kind of, half picks it up and, the debate is whether he's worthy, he's not worthy yet, or, they keep letting people. I think the Russos have confirmed it now and Kevin's confirmed it that he always could. But, it's moments that you wanted that to happen. And it's like, it's one of the first things we started pre-vising, right? Because, again, you're going to pre-vis your favorite scenes first. And you kind of go nuts, right? So anytime you previs something, they want something that's 2 minutes long, 3 minutes long, 5 minutes long, you do something that's 20 minutes long, and then you pull the best beats out of it, and those are what go into the film.
Yeah, I also love that you're pulling from you have years and years of history, but there's some really more recent moments. The Hail Hydra moment from Captain America, Steve Rogers, that was right before Secret Empire, or even Cap fighting Cap, which has happened multiple times in the comics, but recently that happened in Secret Empire, or seeing Rescue, like amazing moment with her and Tony, but that's only from Invincible Iron Man, which is within the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. It's really cool to see these references of the comics come in. Mm-hmm. Where do you and the teams, are there specific eras you're looking at, or you just look at any bit of Marvel history?
Any bit. You do a deep dive. And then you just kind of you find the pieces that are going to play the best for you. And I mean, and I think that's, that's the point, right? You look at these films and you look at, for a multitude of reasons why these are successful. Yeah. They're successful because you love the characters and you love the comics. Because if you don't love it, then you're going to make something that, it's not going to hit. It's not going to resonate. And kind of bringing in just those moments for fans when they're going to recognize it. It's, again, it's the best part.
The best. So I want to wrap up here by just expanding a little bit on the sort of the process of things for our This Week in Marvel fans. You go from concept art to previs to finished footage. You have the references, all this stuff. What is that process really like look like from soup to nuts for you? And now you've got 3 years of this.
Well, I mean, it's something that you love it, right? You're doing it to the exclusion of all else in a way. You transition into this mode where you're nothing but the movie, and it's something that you come out the other side. Usually it'll be like a year and a half. This one was 3 years, so you're deeper, you're underwater longer than you thought you were going to be. But it's something that as an entire process, it's you've got an incredible group of people working on the films and working on the different components, and it's something that you along the way, everybody is bringing 110% to the show. You, as you're going through, you see the art department, and there's this hallway that's, 100 feet long of artwork, of sets, and like five versions of Vormir, and like 10 versions of Titan, and, just kind of seeing this, everything evolve to what it becomes as the final piece. And as everything comes together, you kind of see how it starts playing as a whole, and, you see the movie, and, every time Cap looks at Peggy, a tear comes in your eye, right? Every time you see the big effect shots coming in, you're kind of like, yeah, this is going to work. This is going to be amazing. And then, finally get to see it at the premiere and with the audience. It's just, kind of this amazing thing. So,
what a journey.
It is. It's really great.
Yeah. And part of the journey is the end. And that's the end of this episode of This Week in Marvel. Thank you so much for being here. And everybody watching and listening, make sure to pick up Marvel Studios' Avengers Endgame on digital now. Yay! Thank you, Dan, and thank you to the team at Marvel Studios for helping us put that together. All right, we do need to get to our question of the week. Lorraine, what you got?
Since we are talking about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. wrapping production for their season 7, why don't you guys share with us your favorite memory from Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah, and you heard from us some of our favorites earlier in the show, so you can tweet your answers using This Week in Marvel, the hashtag, email them to twinpodcast@marvel.com, or send a message to our Facebook page at facebook.com/ThisWeekInMarvel. Looking at our community section, Huh. Breaking news here. It's all about butts and people who like butts. Butts, butts, butts. That is what is written in our show notes. I wonder who could have put that in there.
I don't know, but they're so smart.
First up is Katie Pankert at ThinkPank on Twitter. She says, my favorite costume, hands down, Spider-Gwen, a.k.a. Ghost Spider. Love the clean black and white paired with a pop of pink and blue. But the best part is her gravity-defying hood. How does she keep it on while swinging around?
It's connected to her mask.
Sure.
That's what I say.
Science.
Maybe she has Velcro that sticks under there, or at least that's what most cosplayers do.
Yeah. Also, it is now a symbiote, so she can make it do whatever she wants.
Yeah. Also, I love, remind me the artist's name, Robbie...
Rodriguez.
Robbie Rodriguez. He said one of the reasons why he chose the white costume in the way that he did was because it was easy and it looked cool. The end.
It looks really cool.
Karis Pollard said, but hashtag this week in Marvel goes to Valkyrie. Seeing her new powers, her struggle to balance that with being Jane Foster is a great sign of things to come. And the powers come with a dark side. It's also utterly gorgeous. Should have known with this awesome creative team on it.
Yeah. So good. Kefu and Jesus Arbutov. It is a gorgeous looking book. One more in here. We got it from RP67 saying, I really like the look of the new Avengers game coming out in 2020. The different look of the Avengers is interesting. They have more of a real world look versus movie star, if that makes sense. Good job to the developers. Can't wait. Of course, you're talking about Marvel's Avengers coming from Marvel Games and Crystal Dynamics, and it's very exciting. I am super duper excited. I've played a bunch of it over time. We'll have, of course, much more to share about the game as we get closer to its release in May of 2020.
Yeah, 2020, when we'll all finally see clearly.
I gotta go.
You do have to go because this episode's over.
Oh, that's right. I'm Ryan.
I'm Lorraine.
This is Marvel.
Your universe.